Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to The Naked Truth, hosted by me, Lori Corrigan, and sponsored by Snake Charmer Men's Body Waxing. This show is all about nakedness, spiritual, emotional, mental, where I pay tribute to the valuable contributions you gentlemen make both personally and professionally. It's a safe zone for you guys to speak your minds amidst the current social climate where you struggle to be heard. Okay, everybody out there in listener land, pay close attention because here's a newsflash for you. It is not metrosexual for men to consciously strive toward bettering their physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual selves. Guys actually care very deeply about living a healthy lifestyle and being committed to a higher level of self-care. With me today to prove that, personal development coach, Phoenix Suns yoga instructor, and former Division I baseball player, Donnie Starkins, to delve into how a sports injury and subsequent pain med addiction set him on a life path to share the powerful healing of yoga and mindfulness. Welcome, Donnie.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Let's start with one word everyone's familiar with and terrified of at the same time. Addiction.
Ooh.
So when we hear that word, we tend to, and correct me if I'm wrong, go with two other words, drugs, alcohol. But following you on Facebook as I have, I've learned a lot and have been inspired and broadened. Food, sex, work, gambling. Anything that we're powerless against becomes an addiction. Even stuff that's good for us can cross the line and head down that slippery slope, such as water, because once we drink too much, we can consume it to the point of water intoxication, which upsets electrolytes and decreases sodium. So, talk to me about addiction, where the line is drawn, and why we tend to go over it.
That's a great opening.
Good
start to the interview. So one of them that you didn't mention that I'll throw in there that I think we all suffer from some level, well, most of us probably do, is our smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So technology, which is a whole nother ballgame. Me in this type of work, teaching mindfulness and presence, and then still struggling with that same thing, I'm often telling myself, geez, if I'm struggling with this and I teach this stuff, how is everybody else doing with it? And then the younger generations and the kids that are now growing up with smartphones and devices in their hands like we didn't have. So going back to your initial question on addiction, you said it, powerless. If we are powerless over something and if we can't say no to it, I would consider that an addiction. Some of our addictions kill us quickly and some of our addictions kill us slowly. And some of the addictions we are so bound to that we spend our whole lives chasing something that's outside of us. I believe that addiction, a big piece of addiction is the loss or lack of connection, human connection. And I also feel like a lot of addiction comes from our wounds, our childhood wounds, or and it could be anything. It's something that we don't want to feel. And so I've said like it's a God-shaped hole in your heart. Something has happened and we don't want to feel the pain and we've created a story and that story has become our reality and it's completely disconnected us from humanity or the human connection. And so we will put our drug or our addiction before anything else.
It's our safety zone, you're saying?
It can be our safety zone. It's a good way to numb out. I believe that it's a way to not feel. I believe being a teacher of yoga and mindfulness and the mind-body connection that in order to heal, we have to feel. And substances, technologies, anything that distracts us from whatever it is, that is can be an addiction.
You posted a TED Talk talking about addiction is the absence of connection. And there was a research, wasn't there a project where with rats, where they were given two water bottles? And they, do you recall that? They were given, you post a lot of stuff. So yeah, here's what
yeah,
I took from it.
Yeah.
They were isolated, given two water bottles. One had, I don't remember if it was meth or what. It had something in it where, given the choice, once they had a taste of that, that's where they went. They didn't go to the regular one. They had nothing else to do, nothing to stimulate them. So the next set was a group of rats in a rat park, things to do, things to eat, socialization. That one bottle of water that was tainted went virtually untouched because the connection was there. So this TED Talk was saying that he'd posted, we're doing it so backwards in our corrections industry, but there's money to be made doing it that way if we were connecting people to society and giving them purpose. Purpose is a huge word with you. Mm. And giving them small loans to be small business owners. People can't get jobs because they're branded with that ex-felon. So that speaks to just what you said right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in what you said right there. And yes, that human connection is a big piece of it. I talk about this a lot with the components of mindful self-compassion. And this ties into what you're saying, but there's three components of mindful self-compassion. The first one is self-kindness. Even going back a little bit, so I lead a lot of retreats and I teach and do personal development workshops here and across the country. And the common theme is that we don't love ourselves enough. It's across the boards, that is it. Whether it's the way we talk to ourselves, whether it's the way we will show up for everybody else and take care of everybody else, but we're neglecting to take care of ourselves. The bottom line is, and a lot of it is our stories and the way, just the how hard we are on ourselves. So the component number one of self-compassion is self-kindness, which would mean, like, if you think about the way that you show up for your friends, like, you have a friend that messed up, they did something dumb, or they're feeling inadequate, or they're facing a tough life challenge. How we show up for that friend, like the positive words that we say are energy. But if it's us that mess up or we do something stupid, the way that we talk to ourselves, completely different. So self-kindness says you put the supportive arm over your own shoulder like you would do a friend who's struggling. So that's the first part. Common humanity is the second one. This is human connection. And we can get into my story if we go there or not. But at my rock bottom in addiction, my story was, I'm the only one going through this. Poor me. I'm the victim. This doctor screwed me over. Like all these stories, blaming other people, isolating myself to where I wasn't hanging around with anybody, wasn't around my family. I didn't want to be around anybody. And I think some of the decisions I was making, I don't think people really wanted to be around me, or at least that was the story I was telling. But common humanity tells us that part of being human is that we're going to struggle. We're going to suffer. We are all flawed works in progress. And so it's actually what connects us all as humans, not disconnects us, that we're all going through stuff. And then the last piece is mindfulness. And mindfulness in regards to mindful self-compassion is being able to stay with the pain or the challenge or the struggle long enough to actually meet it with some awareness and self-compassion, but also not hold on to it so long to where it becomes our story. Mm. And I say that because when we're feeling that pain or we're getting uncomfortable, many of us in whatever addiction it is, we don't want to feel it. So we go date and we go on all these different dates, or we go like just, you know, go have sex with a random, or take a drug or take a drink. And it's because there's something within us that we don't want to feel. So those are the components. And that's kind of a long-winded answer to some, or a follow-up to everything that you were sharing.
You can never be long-winded. Everything you say has a value. See, don't second guess yourself.
Thank you.
Let's get into your story. Let's talk about your sobriety.
Yeah. So my story, I grew up here in Phoenix, Arizona. Grew up here my whole life playing athletics, specifically baseball, all the way up until my senior year at Arizona State, where I had what was my fifth surgery on my left knee. And that surgery was a big one. It was a cadaver transplant of my meniscus. I was the first person in Arizona to ever have this procedure, but the doctor, assured me that if all went well, it would be like having a new knee and I might actually be able to play again. But the day I woke up from that surgery, I knew I would never play again. Just between the signs and scars of the massive trauma and the unbearable pain that I was feeling, like I just knew it was over for me. And so for that, from that day and for many years after, my world was turned upside down from a life of addiction and just self-destructive living and decisions from the addiction to pain meds. I did other drugs too, but really what had a grip on me were pain meds, whether it was Vicodin, any pain med. And if it wasn't that, it might be something like Xanax or Valium or just anything that was to the point where it wasn't about me getting messed up or getting high. This was about feeling normal. This was about being able to, in the morning, I would wake up, like at my bottom, I was so bound by this, I would wake up and not think about breakfast, shower, or even using the restroom, but actually waking up, taking the pills so that 20 minutes later on an empty stomach, the pills would kick in. I would feel this like calm relief soothing over me. I could breathe. And then I could go about my day. But then 2 hours later, the pills would start to wear off. And then the cycle of anxiety and depression and all the stuff would come up again. Yeah, that went on for many years after baseball. But finally, I have family that never gave up on me. They've tried to intervene many times. And then finally, when I was ready to surrender, I went to rehab. When I got into rehab, I started to get really interested on what the hell had happened to my life. Going from this baseball player star, like that was my identity, it's all I ever knew, to a drug addict. And so what I learned in there was that I had a lot of trauma, physical trauma from this surgery. It was massive. It was rough. I was bedridden for a month and a half, taking 80 Percocet a week for a month, and then getting cut off cold turkey after that. But at the core of all of that, it wasn't that of why, of where my addiction came from. It was the loss of my purpose, the loss of my identity, the loss of the love of my life, the only thing I ever knew, baseball. And then one day it was gone and I didn't know who I was. I didn't have anything else. I didn't have another plan. That was just the plan for me. There was pain, but it was the emotional pain of the loss that really had me continuing in the addiction for so long. So after diving in and doing the work of 12 steps and therapy and personal development, that's what I came to understand. And so today I have over 6 years of sobriety. My wound of addiction, my past, what used to bury me in guilt and shame, has become my best asset. It's given my past and, you know, even all the terrible decisions and all the worry and pain I put my family through, worrying if I was even going to make it out alive, this has given me an access point to a greater purpose. And it was freely given to me. You know, the men in my life today in sobriety, like this was all freely given to me because somebody gave it to them too. And that's kind of the beauty of a 12-step program or something where you have that human connection specifically to men for me. This is what has given me a freedom that I never even imagined was possible. And so to think that all of those bad decisions led me to this moment, it's amazing.
Wow, let me take a breath on that.
Yeah, me too.
Jeez. Last night when I was with a client, she is very, very, very aware. She's very spiritual. She's not religious, but our conversations are incredible. She enlightened me on when we are getting in the way of somebody's journey to help because we think they need the help. And when we get to step back and let them just experience the pain of it. So your family doing interventions on you, with you, that's our go-to. That's our gut. When we say we have to hit rock bottom, that's translated to we're done learning from the pain. We're ready now to rise above it. And man, were you the phoenix or what?
Well, I love that, you know, and I immediately think about, I go to my mom because she was a really good enabler. She's just blinded by love.
Yeah.
And without any tools, like I didn't have tools, she didn't have tools. So she just didn't know what the next right thing to do was. So I think about this all the time because what breaks my heart more than anything in the world are the friends and families that get left behind when one of their loved one dies from the disease of addiction or mental illness or suicide. And I think about what it would have been like for my mom had to wake up every single day knowing that her baby boy wasn't here. And, you know, I'm having been in recovery, but also some of my closest childhood friends, my college roommate, they're no longer here, and they've died from the disease. And I found a way out. And so it, you know, I've had two friends in the last couple months, childhood friends that same thing, passed away from the disease. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart for their families because they have to clean up the wreckage of the past and be with that pain and take on the guilt and whatever else comes with it.
Yeah.
To have found a way out, yeah, it breaks my heart, but then it inspires me. So seeing this, seeing it on the news, and I, you know, when a famous person, you know, I kind of get not happy, but I'm glad it's happening because then there's more light being shined on it,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to if there wasn't any of these big name, you know, pro athletes or rock stars, if it wasn't happening, this would just be like, it's a way bigger problem than anybody knows. Mm-hmm. So that it happens to the people that are getting the publicity, at least it shines some awareness onto just how big of a problem this is. But I think most people, almost everybody's has been affected by it in one way or another, whether it's themselves or a family member or a friend, because
mm-hmm.
it is rampant right now.
Oh, it is. And how much attribution do you put toward spiritual presence and vibration and awareness? We all operate at different levels. Those of us who don't find our ways out from a mortal perspective, you know, it's so different. Humans, reactionary. Spiritual awareness is just be with it. Where do you put, you didn't realize you had that power, that strength, until now you're looking back and you can retrace every single step that you wouldn't do differently, that you weren't meant to do differently. So this is the message you're passing on, that through yoga and meditation and mindfulness. Mindfulness is a hard one for people to get. It's so deep, but so surface at the same time. It's not hard. Speak on mindfulness.
Yeah. So mindfulness and presence, these two words often overused these days, but rarely embodied. And mindfulness, the definition that I always use, is paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, without judgment. And so it's about just waking up to the fact that our life only unfolds in moments. So it's moment to moment. And if we're not present or awake for those moments, then we end up missing out on what's most valuable in our lives. With the smartphones and with the biggest companies in the world paying the smartest people in the world to create these algorithms to capture our attention, it is essential to have a practice that teaches us to focus.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're going to get really, really good at being distracted because of the world we live in. So when we can come onto our yoga mat, which is a moving meditation, it gets us into our bodies, or we can sit in meditation, or we can walk in meditation and put the phone down, and or even eating, mindful eating, and putting the phone down and being present with whoever you might be eating with. It's about paying attention. It's about being in the moment, eliminating distractions. I like to talk about the four superpowers of mindfulness, and the first one is zooming in. So it's the ability to focus. The ability to focus and ignore distractions.
And talk.
Yeah,
eye
and
to
talk,
eye.
Talk, yeah, and heart to heart, and in beyond the surface level conversations too. So number two would be zooming out. So if zooming in allows us to focus, zooming out gives us perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Perspective allows us to take a step back and see the bigger picture. Know that when it's time to move on or let go, to let go, and then also just not getting caught in all the emotional and mental drama that our minds create. So the third one would be, so you got zooming in, zooming out, the pause. So I love this one. This is the power of the pause. Being able to pause, take a breath, take a step back, respond in love as opposed to reacting in fear. Pausing and mindfulness allows us to just really make less mistakes and make better decisions and align our choices with our core values. And then the fourth one is kind of just like this idea of changing the channel. So being able to, if there's something you're seeing that you don't like, being able to shift your perspective or change the channel. And so when you can focus on the positive things and do gratitude practices and get out of the negative thinking or the old limiting beliefs, and you focus on the good stuff with some type of practice, whether it's writing down three things you're grateful for, some type of practice that allows us to give the things that we want to see mm-hmm. in the movie of our mind mm-hmm. more screen time. Mm-hmm. And then the things that we want to let go, these old limiting beliefs and stories, the less we pay attention to them, the less screen time they get.
What is your view on why we go so easily to the negative and work so hard to regain positive?
Well, whatever we are in the practice of will grow stronger. So I believe that we have spent our whole lives in that negative self-talk. The self-love piece, it comes back to that. Like the way that we talk to ourselves and the way that our parents talk to us. A lot of times the voice isn't even our voice. It's somebody else's voice. Typically, it's going to be one of our parents or mm-hmm. maybe someone that brought us up. So it's those stories that you're not good enough, whatever it is. So we've been telling ourselves that our entire lives. So we got good at it.
So this directly relates to another post on your Facebook about kids and in school. And why are we not teaching them to respect themselves, to wash away. I mean, they're still early, starting even at kindergarten. That's 5 years that the construct has been set. Easy to undo. You listed a whole bunch of things you can do to help kids at a young age regain who they were when they were free and young and pure, and not this training and harmful with good intent a lot. Parents don't realize what kids pick up and what they're putting out there a lot of times. And then there are just some bad parents. But the ones who, you tell me, what makes a good parent to start with? How do you mold a child?
Show up present and show up from love all the time. My parents did that. My parents were divorced when I was 7, but they always made the best out of what could have been a bad situation. They made it about the kids. They didn't make it about themselves. So even though it might have not been ideal, they were cordial. We still, like from that time all the way until now, celebrate holidays together. So I think it's being selfless, not making it about the parent. I think a big, big piece today, in today's day and age, is that kids are not getting the attention of their parents because their parents are distracted and their parents are looking at their phones while their kids are looking up at them, starving for their attention. And even though they might not feel the initial impact of it today, that is going to mess with them big time down the road. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and talking about in the schools, I was never taught how to love myself in grade school. I was never taught how to focus, how to use my breath, how to show up with compassion towards myself and towards my classmates. These weren't things that I was taught in school, but man, like I could have really used that stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't need mathematics, you know, other than some basic understanding, you know, what's black and what's red and understanding like what I need to add up and make so I know what expenses are coming in and what money's come or what expenses are going out and what money's coming in.
That along with, okay, so life courses, how to get through life once you're out of high school. And even sooner than that, they're trying to get this whole big thing going where you are taught how to balance a checkbook. Even though we don't need to, what happens when the grid goes down? You're going to have to balance your checkbook. Well, if the grid goes down, we're not going to need money. So that really doesn't matter. But the point is, life skills, that's all tangible stuff. You're advocating for the intangibles, for the inside, the emotional and the spiritual, and all. It all works together.
Absolutely.
Do you know any schools that actually have those stepping stones going now?
Well, I do. I mean, my So my brother, mom, and sister all teach at the same charter school here in Central Phoenix. And with charter schools, there's less structure. So mm-hmm. there's more flexibility in what they can say, what they can teach and not teach. And so they are doing meditation, doing yoga. They'll go to recess and after recess do a 5-minute meditation or a 5-minute shavasana after recess so that when they come back into the classroom with the teacher, they're chill. They're good. They're not all spun out and still like super hyper from recess. So it's just that ability to be able to, again, pause. That's a big piece of it. So yeah, I know schools that are doing it. My sister teaches at another school in North Phoenix and she implements this. And now you have their students talking about, I need to go take a mindful walk, Mrs. Starkins. Like this languaging in these words, like, wow. What if we would have had a little bit of that?
We didn't really relate to it back then. There's been huge, as this generation, not maligning, but just acknowledging and seeing what's happening, is so disconnected that it has become a medicine. It has become a necessary drug to reconnect. If we have to put a label on it, spirituality is kind of a funky word for them. Having a conversation is even a scary thing. And you're talking about intentional eating, awareness when you're eating. A lot of people eat by themselves. They don't even realize they've put the food in their mouths. They're so busy looking and being distracted. So sitting there and having a meal with your food, slowly eating and tasting it and feeling the fullness, something as simple as that, would be very challenging for a lot of people. Yeah. And then going out to eat to do it by themselves, forget it. Just, you know, sitting in your own space, doing it and realizing you're eating for more than just filling a void, because eating is medicine. Food is medicine, mental, physical, spiritual, everything. I don't have a question.
I love that you're covering this, because I teach a lot on this. And mindful eating says, so if you just keep the word 20 in mind, mindful eating says that we need to chew at least 20 times. It's actually 20 to 30 times per bite for every bite that we take. Mindful eating also says that it takes 20 minutes for the brain even determine if it's full or not. And it also takes 20 minutes for the sensory pleasures of the brain to feel the satisfaction of being full.
Okay.
And so eating in a stressed state, eating on the go, this is the most counterproductive way that we can feed and fuel our bodies. I think about how I grew up eating, and I eat fast, and I still eat fast. And here we go. Like, I teach this, but I have to – I'm in this work, first of all.
That's awesome.
I teach this stuff, but I am right in it with all of us, that I have to remind myself to slow down and pause and do these things. It's still a practice for me. But I spent my whole life chowing down my food. And today, I'm a lot more aware of it. And I feel like crap when I eat quick. So I would just encourage the people listening out there to slow down, to get present, to be present with the people at your meals. Like, enjoy it. Sit in it. Put your phone down. And just and while you're eating, eat. Because all the research tells us that we're happiest when what we're doing is what we're thinking.
So there's the struggle. Put the phone down, okay, but it's still within the reach of my hand, and I'm going to just leave it up instead of down. How about you just put it in the other room and turn it off altogether? The feeling of withdrawal. Totally a visceral feeling, right? Especially with the generation brought up with it coming out of the womb. How do you advise them? How do you break that?
So I believe that if your phone is out on the table or you're looking at your phone, whether it's eating or it's in conversation, you're basically telling the person that you're eating with that something is more important than them. I would always encourage, like, these, especially working with athletes, having these contests, like, you guys are all going to dinner together. Put all your phones, you know, 10 feet or 10 inches, a foot in front of you. And first one to grab their phone buys dinner for everybody. So they make it a game, make it a contest, because they like those contests to be competitive. But yeah, put it, like, make a challenge out of it. But it's going to take a practice. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing how much attachment is there, thinking that we're really going to miss out on something for 20 minutes because we can't have our phone by us. And
is it that, or is it the holding like a cigarette? Is it now it's become such an extension of physically who we are? It, you might not get anything for 3 hours, but you're checking and you have to hold it. I have a credit card register for work, and it is shaped exactly like a phone. It's got that feel. I equate this to the cigarette habit, picking up the telephone and then smoking at the same time, or going out and having a drink. And it's all that conditioning. So when they throw their phones in the middle of the table, conversation may go, I can see the conversation with all the anxiety. They're talking about what they're feeling right then. They're talking about, I can't stand it. I'm going to explode. I have to grab my phone, but I'm not going to. So this expression of pain going across the table, or are they, is it forbidden for them to even discuss what they're doing? Or is part of the practice letting them just vent it out?
Well, that's a good question. And to be honest, this is something that I encourage. I don't necessarily follow up and say, how did it go? But how can we get, especially these are 20 to 25-year-old kids mm-hmm. still. And so this is all they know. But I, as you're explaining it, I can just sense how, you know, the phone is in reach because it's a contest. So they can, like, if they go for it. But how present are you really when you are, all you can think about is wanting to grab your phone, but somebody's, yeah. you know, having a conversation with you, something important they're wanting to share, and all you can think about is grabbing your phone. I want to see it, or resisting. And then you're giving that energy to the resistance of, I can't grab it. And again, it's just it's these process. Phones are supposed to connect us, and technology is supposed to connect us, but it's actually disconnecting us. And it's not technology. It's just the human. Yeah. That with a lack of tools and practice and discipline have created a bit of a mess.
I don't know how old you are, and you don't have to divulge that, but I suspect that you got your first cell phone later in life, around 15, 16, where you had 1 foot solidly pre-tech takeover and one on the other side, which I'm a boomer, so I had to learn with all the rest, 2 feet. Very much on the pre. You have a perspective that puts you in a perfect position to do what you do because you can relate to everybody. And those who are younger, having difficulties finding jobs because they can't interview, because they can't sit here and talk to people, that's a scary projection. So you and your presence, how are you received with Xers and with millennials and now with whatever the new generation is coming up?
I'd like to think that I'm received as a very grounded, present person from them. I am with myself 24 hours a day, and so I see the contrast and see the other side of that. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that I'm in this work because based on what we're seeing, whether it's addiction and the work I do in there or mindfulness, this is good job stability. This issue is not going anywhere anytime mm-hmm. soon. So it's great job stability. It gives me purpose. And it also lights a fire under my butt to say, let's go. There's work to be done. People are dying from this disease. Step up and do more. So I feel like I am right where I'm supposed to be. And when I catch myself doing things, half measures, you know, going through the motions, I have to remind myself, one of my little pattern interrupts is, Donnie, how free do you want to be? And that brings me back to my very bottom and thinking about how bound and how much of a mess I was at my bottom. And so I don't completely shut the door on my past because I want to remember that because it encourages me that I don't ever want to go back there again. So I just ask, how free do you want to be? Because to me, willingness equals freedom. And if you are willing to do the work, if you are willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, you're free. And the moment that you start to do things your way, or you're not putting others first or being of service, it's a very slippery slope when it comes to the world of addiction and just really any type of freedom or purpose.
That's a great point to don't stuff what happened to get you where you are now. Utilize it as a tool. Boy, a lot of people stuff stuff. And if you're familiar with George Carlin's rant on stuff, comedian extraordinaire, check it out on Google, because he's talking more material stuff, how we amass it, how we separate it and then recompartmentalize it. And I think he's also very much alluding to what's going on in the head and the heart. And we're so attached to things, even intangible things, which keeps us taking five steps back and then the one step forward and then questioning that one step, you know, going right back, having, we seem to operate backwards. Our purpose, all of our purpose as humans is to help others and ourselves. We didn't, at the very beginning of the show, you said self-care, self-love, self-help. We talk really nasty to ourselves. And that's a, is demon a harsh word? You want to eradicate the demon? What word choice do you have?
For me, it's just noise. It's the story. It's the limited beliefs and the stories. It's the saboteur is another word. But yeah, these are stuff. And the trajectory of my career changed, completely changed the moment that I actually shared my story. Mm-hmm. I was teaching yoga, still working in corporate America at the same time. I wanted to build this big yoga following. I wanted people to like me and a lot of people to come to my classes. So the people closest to me knew about my story of addiction, but not everybody knew. And I have a teacher, Sean Korn. She's a very well-known teacher around the world, not like Instagram well-known. She is, but she's, I hate to say the word real yoga, but like teaching to the soul. Right. She is the one that changed and made yoga make sense for me. And I went through her. She has an organization called Off the Mat Into the World, and it's a leadership training that talks about, teaches you about service, what service
is.
She's actually based out of LA.
Okay.
Yeah, she'll be coming here soon. She's got a book coming out, and she's on a little book tour. But she changed my life. She is one of my greatest teachers and has become my friend through it all. And she asked the question once in a class, the very first time I met her, how dare we not? She said those words to me the very first time, and it was, how dare I not teach something more than just the physical practice? I'm teaching these classes in Scottsdale, Arizona, and people are pulling up in their nice cars, and they're looking all pretty on the outside, but I know they're dying on the inside. And so how dare I not teach to the soul and teach a message beyond just this physical practice? Because the yoga, the physical is just a tiny piece of the practice anyways. So I went to her leadership training. It was a 5-day leadership training in Minnesota. She said the words again, how dare we not? And this time it was, how dare I not share my story? And so we're tasked with a service project. We go back into our communities and create a service project. And I created this monthly free community class. It was a donation-based called Sunday Yoga Service. And at the first one, I shared my story in front of everybody there. And from that day, everything changed. Getting messages about, one lady had sent a message, my husband died from the disease of alcoholism a month ago, and your story is helping me heal. I'm like, wow, everything I was so worried about, my past that used to bury me in guilt and shame, is my best asset today. Mm-hmm. And from that day, I found my voice, I found my purpose, and it was from sharing my stuff. It was that idea that I, you know, on the outside, if people didn't know, I was this college baseball player and now I'm a yoga, but there was some stuff that happened in between that all around my addiction. And to be a human and be humanized and off the pedestal that maybe some people put a teacher on, I'm in it with you. I am in the work and I will continue to do this work because for me, there's no turning back. I could never stop doing this work. I could never go back and use. I mean, I'm not promised that, but it's contingent on my spiritual condition. And again, how free do I want to be? I want to be free. And that just lights a fire and it reminds me that I've got work to do and people are dying. And I don't want like another mom to have to go through the pain that some of my friends' moms have gone through when they passed away. I can't even imagine.
Are you going for 100% ROI?
What do you mean by that?
Can you save everyone who comes to you for help?
Oh, no. You have to want it. So I will always use the word or the acronym HOW. Honesty, open-minded, and willing. If you go all in on getting honest with yourself, getting honest with your coach, sponsor, mentor, go all in. Be open-minded to taking suggestions, to doing things another way, not your way. Your way's not working out so well. If you're hiring a coach or you're getting a sponsor, you're checked into rehab, something's not working. And then willingness, willing to go to any lengths. You go all in on those, heck yeah, 100% ROI. But that's not up to me. That's up to the coachee exactly. or the student to commit and surrender to doing it their way.
And so that also equates to you knowing your limitations based upon what they're willing to accept from you. And parents can share that viewpoint because the first thing they think is, what did we do wrong? And they didn't. Even if they did a few things for... There are so many moving parts in addiction.
So, yeah.
Your look right now is so understanding and so deep.
Oh, I get it. You know, I get it. And I think at some point we have to stop blaming and take personal responsibility to act on the things. It's like the serenity prayer. Act on the things that you can control and accept the things you can't. And if you just do that in every tough little challenging situation you have or every decision you need to make, there's great freedom in that space. Take big action on the things you can control, your perspective, how you choose to show up. Stop blaming other people and take personal responsibility to own it and own the stuff that you can control and then accept. You know, you're not probably going to change your parents. If you're trying to change them, you know, they're older now. They're probably not going to change. But you can change. You can be the change. You were talking about this earlier where transformation happens from the inside out. Love happens from the inside out. We can only love as far as we're willing to love ourselves. And so a lot of people will seek for love outside of themselves because they can't. They're searching for it by filling a void they can't fill themselves. Mm-hmm. This is where drugs and sex and all these addictions come into play by looking outside of themselves for what's been there all along.
And just masked by unintentional and sometimes intentional hurtful acts, or there's no randomness in anything. Just the way things play out. Disappointment, constant disappointment. Okay, it's called life. But also constant uplifting is called life. There's this thing going around Facebook now. One meme, three words, life isn't easy. It has to be repeated and repeated. And still we lament over things that are just way too much when we put ourselves in that pathway or when we are sort of dropped into it involuntarily. The catchphrase is it's how you deal with it.
Yeah, it comes back to one of the superpowers of mindfulness, perspective. It's not the event that happens, it's the meaning you attach to it. Mm-hmm. So I could sit there and blame this doctor for screwing me over, which I did for a few years, or I can look at the event, I can look at my addiction and attach purpose to it instead of all the blame and everything else I was attaching before that. And so if we take that perspective, no matter how rough the wound was, the trauma, whatever you went through, if you attach positive meaning and can maybe help others by what happened to you, there's great freedom there too.
Yeah, and that's an addiction. The freedom is an addiction. So is there perhaps one addiction that is something you can overdose on? Freedom? Clarity? Can we even apply that word? Because that word indicates negativity. So what would be a different word when we find what we're looking for, who we are? We're progressing just like you are. What would you say the journey you're on is? Is it an addiction of goodness?
I think it's just the the putting the word addiction in front of it for me is tough to do. It's just this is my dharma, my purpose.
Okay.
This is the journey. I think some people can get attached to the end result of freedom. And so we will often like look around the corner and try to get somewhere. And then we miss the magic of the journey of getting there. And so this is like the viciousness of this fast-paced world, the vicious cycle, that if we always think we need to be somewhere, go to the next thing, knock off the next item on the to-do list, the problem is that we actually never land. Land where? The present moment. And so for in a conversation, if I'm that person that always thinks I need to be doing the next thing, that multitasking is actually very productive, and you're doing it in the presence of your partner or your family, you're not there. And the best gift that you can give your family or give yourself is the gift of presence, but it takes practice. And so practices like meditation. And there's so many different apps out there. You can download any app possible. You can meditate for 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, guided meditations, silent meditations, or sound meditations. It's all out there. And it's funny because people that find out I teach meditation will say, the common response is, I can't meditate. My mind never slows down. My response is, nobody's does. So you give your mind an assignment, focus on one thing, the breath, a positive statement, a mantra, whatever it is, and just practice focusing on it. And when your mind drifts away, starts to think about lunch or your date last night or whatever it is, bring it back. And the magic is in the awareness of noticing when you've left and you bring it back, you're building focus. It's like doing a rep with a free weight exercise. These are your mental push-ups of noticing the mind leave, bring it back. And every time you bring it back, your mind's getting stronger and you're practicing presence and you're practicing focus. So I think we just, so many people overthink it. And it's not even about not thinking. A lot of meditation is just noticing what you're thinking about. And one of the gifts I would have loved to have learned when I was a kid was you are not your thoughts. When you can sit in meditation and actually listen to the stuff that you're thinking about, the moment you're able to do that and take a step back, you're not in those thoughts anymore. And you have a space to make a choice now. I can either hold on to those thoughts or I can let that crap go.
And it is crap. Have you read or listened to The Untethered Soul?
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So listeners, go check it out anywhere. And in fact, there are chapters of it for free on YouTube. The Untethered Soul. I can't think of the
Michael Singer. Yeah, he's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks for the info.
Yeah.
Now, your whole purpose is not restricted to two-legged beings, from what I can tell from photos on your Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Your Frenchies.
Yeah, Bubba and Cody.
Yes. There's one photo with people claim you're taking a nap, but you're on the floor. You're prone. And so is which one, black and white?
Oh, that's Cody in Shavasana. Yeah.
Yes.
Lying on my belly. Yeah.
Yes. And so adorable. And I notice the lighter colored.
Bubba. Yeah.
Bubba goes with you to functions.
Yeah. They go, one of my studios that I teach at, Moksha Yoga, has, the dogs hang out in the lobby. They'll actually go in before class starts and kind of greet everybody.
Oh, great.
And then come in when class is over. And they're great. It's like, this is an unconditional love. I feel like we can learn so much from our dogs about unconditional love and presence. I mean, they say a dog's purpose is to be here now.
Mm-hmm.
We can learn so much from them and just how they show up for us.
You don't have to say anything. You have a prop for your purpose. They're perfect for that.
Yeah.
And kids drawn to dogs, what a beautiful connection to show them what you're saying, because sometimes our words, our communication through verbal, misses the mark, especially to kids. So the dogs are a great segue.
Absolutely.
Like I said at the beginning, we can talk for 3 hours. We're at our point here. Bookmark, and I'd love to have you back 6 months or so and see where things are for you. In the meantime, how can people get in touch with you?
Easiest way is my website, and that's just my name, DonnieStarkins.com. It's Donnie, DonnieStarkins.com. On that website has all the retreats and events that I'm doing, my coaching program, my personal development coaching program called The Shift. It's transformation of the mind, body, soul, and it's a 90-day coaching program. In about 2 weeks, I am launching an online coaching program, 90 days, where the one I do now, I do one-on-one coaching calls, and that's available. The next one will be all online, all virtual, with meditations and yoga and mindfulness and a whole lot of awesome personal development exercises and work that have left the biggest impact on me. And about 2 weeks after that, so probably the beginning of October, the Shift into Sobriety, another 90-day program for anybody that's, you know, maybe newly sober, wanting to get sober. And it doesn't even have to be substances again. It just might be emotional sobriety. There's some type of other addiction that they have. And this will have the foundations of some of the 12-step stuff, but a lot of mindfulness and a lot of the same personal development exercises and work that I've done that has given me the freedom that I've found. And so I'm just passing it on, and it'll be available again at the beginning of October.
And briefly, before we go, talk about, you go into corporations.
Yeah, corporate mindfulness. I do talks, speaking engagements on mindfulness 101, mindful leadership. So yeah, I'll talk to corporations, go in and actually do one-on-one coaching on like a retainer basis, maybe once a month, go in and do 20-minute coaching sessions with employees that are just stuck or they're wanting to level up their lives. And so the topics will vary, but it all weaves around the same things of intention and purpose and mindfulness and showing up as the best version of ourselves in and out of the workplace.
Which goes both physically, mentally. So if you're feeding your mental and emotional performance, you've got to also put a dish or two in for your physical one, because it all works together. And we hear that all the time too. So if any area is lacking, it will affect the others.
Correct. Absolutely. How we do anything is how we do everything. And, you know, if one area we're all in, there's probably another area that is suffering from it. So making sure, and that's why in my coaching program, it's mind, body, soul. And then we'll cover often a lot of like the 8 major areas of your life, making sure that they're somewhat balanced all the time so we can be in the flow of life and not feel like we're fighting life all the time.
Hmm. Great closing words. Anything else? Are we good?
No, thank you. This was very enjoyable. I could talk about this all day long with you. So well, thank you for having me.
Bookmark, you're coming back for sure. You have been listening to The Naked Truth, hosted by me, Lori Corrigan, and sponsored by Snake Charmer Men's Body Waxing. The show is all about nakedness, spiritual, emotional, mental, where I pay tribute to the valuable contributions you gentlemen make, both personally and professionally. It's a super safe zone for you guys to speak your minds amidst this current social climate where you struggle to be heard. Until next time.